It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right. Ta-da! What do you think?
It's all good.
Yeah. This is from my new laptop, but I'm betting you will notice no change. Because it's still the same webcam. The camera on this new laptop is much better than on the old laptop. Still not as good as this webcam, though. So I'm just using it. In case folks don't remember, I had a shitty laptop. It was $300, but it was purple. It's the only laptop I bought without consulting my tech-minded friend. And consequently, I fucked up. Mostly, it had an incredibly sad and slow processor. And so everything was slow. I would open the computer and log in and everything, and I would click, double-click on the Chrome icon, and I would wait somewhere between 20 to 45 seconds just for anything to appear, and then another 10 or 15 seconds for it to solidify into an actual web browser that I could then use. Going to pages that had like banner ads and stuff, I would go and then I would wait a very long time before I could even start to read things. It was terrible. And my wife, she says, why don't you buy a new one? And I say, I don't have enough in my own personal spending cash to buy another one right now. I have to save up. And she says, no, just use household incomes. That's fair. We usually buy computers that way. I say, yes. However, this computer works. I am not such a big entitled asshole that I'm like, it's too slow. I want to buy another one. Like, it does everything. So the other day, the speakers stopped working. Just out of nowhere. And I tried all sorts of stuff. I changed, messed with the settings, tried to update the drivers. I, of course, rebooted all that jazz. Nothing. Like, well, this kind of sucks. But at least I can still use the Bluetooth headset, you know, or headphones and things like that. That's great. I tried those and those aren't working. And this was like the day after we last recorded. I'm like, well, shit. So I ordered a new laptop. This one is nicer. This one is definitely more expensive, but not crazy. I narrowed it down to three of them that were all sort of in the same price range that looked good. And I ran them by that friend of mine to make sure I didn't screw up. And that friend is like, I wouldn't get this one. And of the other two, I think this one's probably better for you. And I'm like, that was my first choice. Anyway, I'm going to get that one. So I got it. It's a Asus VivoBook, which I have since found out is Asus's version of like a MacBook Air. So I pay for it. It's coming. It's shipped. Suddenly the sound starts working on my old machine. Of course, it was the day after gaming. So during gaming, I was able to experiment with Zoom while connecting via my phone to the actual audio. Was terrible. So I'm very glad I didn't have to do that for this podcast. But it showed up this afternoon, and I spent multiple hours getting it all set up so I could use it tonight. It is awesome. It is so god dang fast. You would not even believe. It's crazy. And I wasn't sure I was going to be able to use it tonight because there's a lot of bits to do. I forget all the bits tied into this podcast because it was real easy, you know, to set up Zoom and that's all good or whatever. But I'm like, oh, wait, I got to get Audacity. Oh, wait, I got to get FileZilla. Oh, wait, FileZilla has to connect to the website. And I don't remember, like, what the details are for that because it's an IP thing and all that. And also, Audacity can't use the Zoom files the way it is. We had to do something additional to make it work. So I had to screw around with all that stuff. I took the other laptop and just typed what I saw into FileZilla, got it to work. I moved over the intro and outro files via flash drive. And I practiced this afternoon. I did a very short Zoom meeting by myself that I recorded. And tried to give the audio file to Audacity so it would prompt me to do all the crap that I did before. So now it's all good.
I think the picture looks better.
See, I think the picture looks worse.
No, I think it looks better.
Now that it's smaller, maybe not. When I had it full screen while I was waiting for you, I was getting artifacts.
Oh, well, I'm sure it looks better than it has, or at least seems to look better.
Ooh. It could. I mean, things should be faster. I mean, like I said, it's super fast. Processors are much better. Even the RAM and stuff is better, and the old one wasn't bad. It's also a solid state drive, just all sorts of great stuff, and very easy because both Windows and Google, once you like tell them who you are, they're like, "Oh, you want us to bring all your crap over from everywhere else?" And you're like, "Yeah." So like Google immediately even remembered my history. So like, you know how there's some websites that I don't have bookmarked, but I know if I go to the browser and I type in like a whatever, you know, like it'll pop that up. It knows that again too. It's crazy. Love it. Yeah. It's so fast. Yeah. So fast. I'm just happy. That's part of the reason I really want to do this podcast this time is I have a feeling processing the file may go much faster this time because it is slow as shit. It's about a half hour to 45 minutes after we're done recording that the file is even ready to use normally.
Right. I've noticed that.
So fingers crossed. But hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world I was putting together a joke. I wanted to do a thing like The Fugitive or something about how we're dedicated to finding the real killers. But the joke was going to be that we were trying to prove that we were innocent of killing our spouses. But like that hadn't happened yet. It was going to be in the future. So like that was the joke that like we're proving ourselves innocent of killing our spouses like 6 months from now or whatever. But although I think there's a solid joke in there. Every version I had was just super fucking dark. So like it, but I do think there's a solid joke hiding in there somewhere. But I'm not going to find it. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 517.
Yep. I know that because to help myself out, I actually downloaded episode 516 from the web hosting to have on this computer because it's just useful for labeling to have a copy of an episode. And I figured, right, why not the new one? All right. I didn't get to it last week, so I should do it there. For those of you just joining us, don't you like my new computer? We have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. People, you know who you are. Write in to that email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com with little note cards. Or sorry, not little. How would you email note cards? No, write in with little notes, comments, topics, questions. Those things. Stuff like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them, manifest physically within the hat itself. Servants draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show, except the parts that aren't, which is the vast majority of it. How's your week been? You look a little blue. Is that a filter?
No. It's all right. I don't really have anything to talk about as far as my week goes. What about you?
It's been a rough one. I mean, the winter's really kicking up a notch. It is not doing well on my psyche.
Mm.
But I'm holding in there. So we've been interested. Did you ever watch the TV show The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel?
No.
You familiar?
I mean, I've heard of it, yeah.
It's an Amazon thing set in the 50s about a woman becoming a stand-up comedian. And
right.
Everybody and their dog says it's awesome. And it's been on our list for a really long time. And but the problem is, that's what I knew about it, what I just told you. And that sounds like something I want to see. It doesn't sound like something I really need to see now. Like, there's nothing very compelling about that. So we never got around to it. And I was thinking about it because I also thought it's kind of a night, like it's not a depressing one, like, because I'm looking for stuff that's like a little less horrible. Because COVID, I'm trapped inside, I'm getting sad. So I thought that was good. And I was talking to my sister, and my sister's like, yeah, we really loved it. And I was finally like, I need to force us to start watching. I think we're really going to like it, but we need to just like take that step and start watching it. And so we did, and we freaking love it. It's really, really good. It's got an incredible cast. It is set in the 50s. It is an Upper West Side New York Jewish family. And there's a lot in there about Jewish culture and stuff like that. There's a lot of stuff related to that, which I didn't know about. It's very clever. It's very funny. It's just really good. It's just really good stuff. Highly, and nobody's murdering anyone. There's no genocide. There's no rape. There's no Nazis. There's no aliens trying to enslave humanity. Like, nobody is secretly out to get somebody over a drug deal gone bad. Like, none of that. There's drama involved. It's a dramedy, I would say. And there is stuff, but none of it is like gut-wrenching. None of it leaves you afterwards like, oh my God. No, it's very clever. It's very funny. Highly recommend. Highly recommend. And I also recommend you push yourself to see it. If you think you're interested, but you haven't gotten around to it, start watching it, because I understand it's not very compelling. Once you start watching it, you'll be into it. So you should do that. Not a lot else. I'm excited. Tomorrow, Judas and the Black Messiah comes out. We'll probably watch that tomorrow night. That looks really good. Otherwise, I must have been watching crappy stuff. Yeah, I don't think I got a lot else. It was an uneventful week. Are you guys still playing the same video game? I forget what you were playing, because you're not playing Spider-Man then.
No video games this week, really. Seems like there was something we were watching, but I mean, I can't even remember. So obviously there's nothing really to say about it. I don't think we've watched any like movies or anything, at least not any movies worth talking about. So
I'm still boxing. That's going pretty well.
That's good.
Yeah, I think there's a component. I mean, and it always sounds bad when I start by saying this. I know my trainer isn't a real person. But she talks to me. And I feel like it may be hitting some spot in my brain that needs some socialization. I mean, I've got Trish, but I feel like there's a component of that. I feel like it's hitting something back there. So that's nice. It's still hard, but it's doable. I've never like been like, oh, I have to stop in the middle or whatever. But it's a hell of a workout.
We did play the RPG we've been playing.
Oh, yes, the dishwasher game. How is that going?
Awesome. Awesome as usual. I mean, I don't really have anything to say about it besides that. I mean, I guess I could talk about some things that happened, but I don't know if that'd be interesting to anybody.
This brings up a good point. GammaCon is happening in a few weeks. Hmm. The role-playing, well, the gaming convention around here. It is only online, and it is free this year. It's a sort of pay what you want kind of model. You don't have to pay anything. So if people are interested, no matter where you live, you could register for that and you could play some games. I wasn't going to, and then I had somebody who texted me and they're like, me, so-and-so and so-and-so are going to play in these couple of games if you want to be involved. And I was like, hell yeah, dude. So now I'm going to be involved. So people should go to GammaCon.org and check that out if you want to do some role-playing or some board games or things like that. There's all sorts of stuff. You can see the whole event list there, but it doesn't cost, and you don't have to be here. So any of you can do it. And Dave Avid will be there running shit. His organization does a bunch of indie games there.
Yep.
Do you know how much longer this campaign is going to go? Is there like a set arc?
Yeah, it's just one more
after this. Oh.
Yep.
So did we end on a big cliffhanger and things this last time?
I mean, the thing about the character I'm playing, Bill, he had a pretty dramatic experience that is probably going to change his entire outlook on life, which I didn't think that was going to happen. In fact, I pretty much committed myself to not letting that happen. It's like, it seems like whenever I play characters in role-playing games, there's almost always some kind of arc near the end, you know, some lesson learned or something, which is fine. And I like that. That's why I do it. But I just thought, you know, just this once, maybe have my character be exactly the same as when he started, because that happens, right? And this is only in the course of a few days, you know. I mean, not
yeah, all people. But I feel like it's more realistic and it's more interesting. Not all gamers are like that, but I very much am one of those that like, okay, this happened. How did this impact my character's psyche?
Sure, sure.
And some people never do. Some people are just like, no, I work out the mindset of my character in the beginning, and then that's what is. No matter what happens, that's what they are. Well, but and I'm like, no, that's not it.
Usually I want the character to go somewhere. I mean, I don't have it planned out ahead of time, but I try to make every opportunity be something that's going to advance. I mean, I don't know where the arc's going to go. I just know that I want it.
You like the dynamism, the growth, sure, the change. Sure, sure. Me too, me too.
And usually by the time the thing's about to end, I can guess, oh, this would be a nice satisfying way for this character to go. And sometimes that's still not where the character goes, but I'm so much in that mindset that I can usually improvise something even up to the last minute that's, I don't know. And I just like to do that. With this character, I'm not going to do that. I'm just not even going to try to do that. I mean, if it happens, fine, but I didn't know how it was going to happen if I didn't make it happen. But like all of these things have happened to this character that I didn't even, some of it I didn't even want to happen. Like I think I mentioned last time that, you know, I didn't want my character and Abby's character to have any kind of special relationship. Yep. I mean, we lived together. I mean, we could talk about the two characters doing stuff for like a whole week, and that's and that's fine. But I didn't really want that. I wanted us both to have to build the characters and do the characters. It almost seemed like cheating to me if our characters had some special relationship and got along. And in fact, the way the characters ended up being created, there was no reason for them to ever have a relationship at all. Yep. And then it just turned out in the course of the game, they kind of had a reason to get together. And now there's been an experience that they've shared that is fundamentally going to change the way my character thinks. At least I feel like I have to do that. I don't have to, I suppose, but it's like, I just feel like it makes complete sense for this to happen. In fact, there's a game mechanic.
And would be weird if you didn't.
Exactly. There's a game mechanic for this where when you're going through a certain thing, because in this game, you list certain values that your character has, and you have an option in the game to challenge a value. Like what the person is going to experience or do is going to be a kind of against that value. And it so happened that when this event occurred, like you said, it would have been odd for me not to say, well, this is challenging this value of Bill's. But now that value has been challenged, it just has to go a particular way, in my opinion. And so there's just going to be this big realignment of kind of all his whole worldview, which is interesting to me as someone who is sort of outside looking at the character. You know, it's like if I picture myself as someone who's watching the game instead of playing it, I think what's happening to Bill is very interesting. But as the player, I'm like, well, I always do this. It just seems like I'm being boring. I don't know.
What you are describing is the reason I play role-playing games. If it wasn't for that, I would just write goddamn stories.
Yeah.
Because it's this very thing where there's growth and change, and specifically, you don't see it coming.
Right.
That's what's cool, is to look after several sessions and be like, wow, this character has changed and grown, and I didn't expect this. And it's the ultimate in a vicarious experience sort of situation. Like, I've had major character growth of a dramatic and interesting form without having to, you know, disrupt my own actual life.
Right. And I think a lot of credit goes to Dave as the game master, but also the person who's put this game together. I mean, he's really created a thing that makes it easy for these things to happen very spontaneously. Without, all you have to do is show up and, you know, go through the process and then commit to the process, and everything else just sort of happens. And it's pretty extraordinary that
David is an artist and an expert.
Yeah.
This is what he does. I genuinely don't know what his career choices have been. I don't know what he's done for a living. I know it's not related to this, but this is what he has spent literally decades honing. It's amazing stuff.
Yeah, it really is. And it creates just a very interesting experience, you know, a potentially therapeutic experience even. If you, like I say, if you let yourself follow the process and commit to it, I mean, it can really be a fantastic experience. So he's just really good at making the game, but also at running the game. It's just a perfect combination. And, you know, I'm speaking to someone who doesn't really have deep experience in playing role-playing games. And so I can only imagine what it's like for someone who's really experienced and can really appreciate some of the nuance that I can't.
It helps that almost all of your experience has been through him, because that's the thing, is your GMs influence you as a player. And especially if you started off with a certain GM and spent a lot of time, that shapes you, not always deliberately and not always in a helpful way, but it shapes you. And so Dave is amazing. As somebody who gamed for a long time, sometimes I come to Dave and I have too much in my mindset already. And so sometimes I don't, because that's the thing. David is brilliant as long as you understand what he's trying to say. And I don't always. When I do, it's amazing. Don't get me wrong, he's smart and he's creative. But the truth is, he's just put in the work. The man has been working on his role-playing games for years and finding, and I he's my role model for that, because I try and do that. I can't seem to put in nearly the effort he does, but it's the same thing. I'm like, over the years, trying to hone, like, why do I like role playing? What do I want from role playing? What do I want to give to others in role playing? How do I do that? And he's just the expert on it.
Well, this is probably the most stat-based, game that I've ever played with him, you know, because he likes a lot of the narrative, you know, even games where you don't roll anything or anything like that.
Yeah.
This game has probably more like mechanics, you know, and you pick your dice and there's quite a lot of dice to roll, and you have a pool of dice. So it's probably the most intensive that way that I've ever played with him, but not a single mechanic is wasted or extraneous or anything else. I mean, a lot of
times
this
has become a generation of games where, rather than to say, okay, to make this very narrativist and very role play rather than gamey, we're going to have minimal rules. But there's also a generation that are like, no, we're going to have mechanics that facilitate the narrative and facilitate the drama.
Yeah.
And this is something I'm still learning to deal with. Because they can get in the way. You can make a good story, but if people focus too much on those mechanics, they sort of forget to inhabit their character. And so on paper, it makes a good narrative, but in the moment, I'm not feeling it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a tricky balance. But yeah, this is a whole thing. The industry is trying to create this sort of thing and has come up with some fascinating methods. And it sounds very counterintuitive to be like, rules for the role play part of it. But it's like, no, it really is, so that you have a consistent image of yourself and it grows and changes realistically.
This might seem off topic, but it isn't. It's actually related. Are you familiar with DMT?
Isn't that a drug?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not. Are you a cop? You have to tell me if you're a cop.
I'm not asking if you've taken it. I'm asking if you're familiar with it. Like, that it exists and what it is.
No. The short answer is no. The longer answer is it's in the Molly family, right? MDMA and all those. I thought it was one of those.
It's all I know is that it's pretty much the drug you're going to hear about when you're interested in very extreme psychedelic experiences. Like, not a mild psychedelic experience, like a really big psychedelic experience. In fact, one of the things about that I've pretty much only heard about DMT, not any other, but not LSD, not psilocybin, not anything else, only DMT before, is that if you, under the right conditions, the right dosage, all this other stuff, when you're taking it, there's sort of a breakthrough of people who use it and have experienced this, experience a kind of breakthrough where they feel like they're not just having a trip, but they actually go somewhere.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when they get there, I mean, it feels like they're in a real place. It feels more real than any other place, although it's very bizarre. And there are these entities there that have often been called machine elves or whatever.
Machines.
That people talk to. And they feel like they're talking to someone, like a real someone, not someone from their head, but like a real someone. And of course, a lot of people do believe that they've had some kind of spiritual experience. They've actually, in a shamanistic kind of way, traveled to this place and talked to actual beings that exist in this parallel universe. And even people who won't commit to that interpretation still won't say that it's not that, right? Mm. They'll say, well, I don't know if that's what it was, but it sure seemed like that's what it was. And it could have been in my head, I guess, theoretically, but they're very skeptical the experience is so dramatic to them that they're very skeptical that that's the explanation. Whatever the explanation is, they think it's probably not that, although again, they're not committing one way or the other. And
are you sure this isn't just Four Loko? Because I've heard very similar stories on people who drink a lot of Four Loko.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a discontinued energy drink that was alcoholic.
Oh, the reason I bring it up is because whenever I hear people talking about these experiences, it seems always like they're people that I don't think, or I have reason to heavily suspect, that they aren't familiar with the theater or with acting.
Mm-hmm.
That they haven't written any fiction, perhaps. In other words, if you are familiar with the theater or with writing fiction or any kind of adjacent kind of thing or role playing, then you're very well acquainted with the phenomena of a character speaking in its own voice, almost in spite of you. Do you know what I mean? So
I do. I'm not sure I would agree that everyone in those fields does.
Okay.
I think that is a particular approach, but it is one that I share with you.
Okay. Well, I feel like if I was on a DMT trip and this happened to me and I had this experience, it wouldn't matter how real these beings seemed. I think I would come out of the trip thinking, this is an experience I'm familiar with. I'm familiar with sitting down and having a conversation with very fully realized, well-rounded beings that talk to like they're not just coming from my head. This is not an unusual experience for me as someone who has been an actor, been a writer, been a puppeteer, you know, or been a role-playing gamer. I mean, or even just kind of imagined having a conversation, you know, with my mom after she passed away, you know, even that. It's like, this is not an unusual experience. And I think people may be coming out of that experience so convinced that they were talking to a real person. This was such a real experience. They never had the experience, that other type of experience that I'm talking about. But I don't know that for sure. I'm just wondering.
I'm curious. I feel like we need to get you some DMT and find out. I still do sometimes make a distinction when I was creating characters to play in a role-playing game, when I was creating my character, the characters that I make and the characters that, as I used to say, were birthed fully in my head in an instant. Because there are some times when I sit down to make a character for a game and I'm like, what do I want? I kind of want this kind of character. So I'm going to do this, and this is going to be the backstory, and these are going to be the stats. But then there are other times where I'm like, what kind of character am I going to play? Oh, there they are. And they're just in my head and they're completely three-dimensional, and filling out the character sheet is purely a matter of saying, okay, so what are the stats and talents and things of this person? Not what do I want them to be? What are they? Because this person already exists in here, fully formed, and I just need to write it down in the system. And some people get that when I tell them, and other people really don't. I've had some gamers that are like, I have nothing like that. I'm like, it's not all the time. Doesn't happen all the time. But sometimes when I'm like, what do I want to play? Somebody's just like, hello, it's me. You're going to play me. I'm like, oh, nice to meet you. And that can be bad because I also get very into the characters. And I want people to understand, because I've been watching some things lately that have been going back to the satanic panic related to D&D and stuff like that. At no point was I a danger to myself. But I had a game where I played a character that did start off as one of those just fully formed in my head. And things went down a certain path that I went to the GM and said, I don't know what to do with this character anymore because I can't see a situation going forward where she doesn't try and kill herself. Mm. And to put it in the simplest terms we literally, not metaphorically, sent her to a farm upstate where she could get some help for her mental health. And I started a new character. But it was a very traumatizing experience because I don't like to think that, like, I don't have some control over this fictitious character I'm creating. But I was like, I can't get out of this one without her trying to kill herself. So it can be a double-edged sword to do that. But yeah, I can see what you're talking about. Mine's much more inhabited than talking. I could put myself in the position of a fictitious character less than I have a conversation with them in my head or I'm used to interacting with them. So DMT might still freak me out. I don't know. If you've taken DMT, tell us about it in the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Seriously, do. That would be awesome.
I assume
people who listen to this do drugs.
I've always had a sense that the characters that I interact with or utilize or whatever, however you want to say it, I always have a sense that they're just in there somewhere. I mean, if they make themselves known, like what you're talking about right away, fully formed or whatever, to me, that just means in the crowd of people, they just happen to be up front. If it takes a while for me to flesh it out, it just means that I'm kind of, I need to go over here. I'm looking for this person. And then I eventually find them or they find me. I always feel like they're in there somewhere and I'm just discovering them. I always feel like that. I never feel like I am creating a character and crafting. I mean, I'm doing that work. But when it's done, it feels more like I found the character or the character found me rather than I just started from the bottom and, you know, worked, you know, crafted it from the bottom up.
This episode was going to be called You Have to Tell Me If You're a Cop, but now I think it's just going to be called Exhibit A, because I'm pretty sure that when we inevitably are both incarcerated for our own mental health against our will, this is what they're going to provide as the primary evidence that we are not, should not be allowed out in public. I feel like this is the episode where we unknowingly invade our deepest and most disturbed mental illnesses.
Really?
That we just consider artistic flair, but in fact are probably diagnosable.
Maybe.
Not crazy, I'm an artist. Speaking of, actually, I've started on a new short story that I'm pretty pleased with so far.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it's nice. All right, we should draw a thing.
Okay.
How about this thing? It's from Jazz. If you, I assume she means us, had to make your living as a craftsman, what skilled trade would you want to learn how to do? And I should specify, because it's a visual thing, craftsman is spelled with a C. So she's not talking about, like, to make craft dinner and things, which is something I would love to do. I think she's talking, you know, physical crafts with a C.
Right.
I feel like, I mean, I have an answer in the chamber. I've had the same answer for years and years and years. This strikes me as something I would think you would have an answer readily available on.
I don't.
Oh, you suck. Well, I do. As a woodworker, I don't know why, although Nick Offerman did help. I've always wanted to be a woodworker. I still consider it sometimes. I'm like, I could do that. I could sort of learn it real basic and stuff, and I just love the idea. I mean, I'm lazy, I never get around to it, but when I was younger I would collect sticks like so many kids did. But unlike some kids, I actually had a collection. Like, I had a box in the garage where I could put my sticks, and sometimes if they were the right kind, I would turn them into things. I would whittle them down to stuff. I would sand them. I still have a walking stick that I made when I was younger. It's a little bit too short for it, but that I carved and sanded down. And I mean, it's real basic and dumb, but I worked real hard on it. I really like it. So definitely woodworking for me. Have you ever done any sort of like crafting things?
I don't really like doing crafting things.
Really?
Yep. I don't. I don't know why that is, by the way. I just don't really like it. I mean, when I was puppeteering, I liked to do the puppeteering, obviously. I liked to design the puppets, but I didn't really like to make them. Abby did.
Interesting.
Abby did, thank goodness, and that's how I that's why I have some pretty nice puppets from that time. And you know, of course I assisted in her making them, but I didn't I wasn't super motivated to actually make them. I mean, once they were made and you know, with her having the main impetus in getting them made from my drawings and everything, then I would do all kinds of stuff with them, and I would write, you know, sketches, and I would practice with them and all that stuff.
But the building was not very fulfilling for you.
Right. Had she not been there to build it, it wouldn't have gotten built, because I just felt no motivation to do it at all.
Interesting.
I don't, the only craft I have ever felt at, I mean, that the thing is not only is this the only craft I've ever done, but I've often felt completely almost neurotically compelled to do it. And that is various kinds of storytelling, like songwriting, or if it has to do with telling a story. And it doesn't, I don't mean like writing a story necessarily.
No. I absolutely understand.
Sometimes it's writing.
I'm the same thing.
But I, not only is it the only kind of crafting I've ever enjoyed, but I've never really felt like I had a choice but to do it, because I'm just compelled to do it. Every other kind, I have just not been interested in. And when I've tried it, I've like really not enjoyed it. And now doing the webcomic is kind of in a gray area, right? Because I didn't make the stick fizz, certainly.
No, but there's definitely a physical creation aspect.
Which I really liked doing.
But it is in service to storytelling.
Right.
So I would say the puppetry would be close.
Yeah.
I think I get it, but the thing is you never hear that from people. The popular culture thing is the opposite. Is the people are like, you know, it's a physical labor and I build something and afterwards it's there and I know I made that. And that's what you always hear from people, you know, getting back to simple stuff and working with your hands and all that. So that's the story. Nobody ever tells the line you just told. But I think it's not necessarily uncommon, because I know a lot of people who don't like being crafty, as it were, just in general.
The one skill that I've always wished I had was drawing, because I think a lot of my storytelling would probably gravitate towards like comic books.
Yeah.
And I've often wished that I could just draw them, you know, without having to rely on someone else or whatever. But as you were talking about a craft that you think you'd like, I do think that maybe possibly I would, and I don't know what's making me think this, because I've never thought this before, just now. I'm thinking that
probably all the DMT.
No, I'm thinking I could possibly enjoy being like a tailor. or a haberdasher, you know.
That is out of left field.
That's what I think too. I mean, not like.
Is your brain giving you any whys?
Well.
Or is it just a gut instinct?
Like, part of it might be that I have in the past thought I might enjoy being a person who makes hats, for example. Because we've talked about hats before.
You have a thing about hats.
But it seems like that could be broadened into, you know, a larger thing about making clothes or costumes. And maybe it also relates to, because a lot of the skills that Abby brought to making the puppets was that kind of skill.
Yeah.
So maybe it's kind of all related to that. And I don't consider drawing a craftsman type skill, but certainly
I would agree.
Certainly being a seamstress type or a tailor, that would
costumer
be,
or something like that. Yeah,
that would be crafts. I just feel like, given the interests that I have had, that would be one where if I did learn it, and if I was good enough at it that it at least didn't annoy me to do it, that I'd also find applications for it that I would really like to do. Like maybe work in the costume department of a theater, or
things that lend itself to your narrative
right,
skills.
Right, right.
Absolutely. Right, absolutely. Right. This is what I thought was a kind of a root one question. This is very intriguing. I think your realization deserves some thought on your part. And I'm extremely curious to hear the listeners' takes on this. What and why would you have a particular skill? Maybe you already do. Or maybe there's something you've always wanted to do. Why is it? Go to the blog and tell us, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Because I'm really something about this fascinates me, because there's a whole field of different crafts and physical production things out there. And as I think we've clearly established here, what one is drawn to or repelled by isn't obvious. Like, there's not an intuitive, oh, they're this kind of person, so they'd like this, or they do this for a living, so they clearly would like this. Like, I think your motivations for wanting to do something, your in general, one's motivations in this instance are really fascinating. So yeah, go to the blog and tell us. I think that could be really cool. We should wrap up here, mostly because due to poor scheduling on my part, I have to go get us some supper. But everybody, yeah, go to the blog and tell us about that. And let me know how the sound and vision is on this, now that I have the new computer and everything. And write in to the hat so we can have more of these fascinating discussions. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. And listen next week. And if you see any machine elves, tell them to listen too.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.